Council.
This is KWAI Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Good morning and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Mr. Howling Wolf. There. Whiskey and Women. W-I-M-M-I-N. You'd understand. That's a foreign language to a great many of you out there, but it's a kind of an English if you were living below the Mason-Dixie line. But as they moved on up to Chicago, they got a little fancy and tried to emulate the real Delta Blues. So anyway, this morning I have several things that we're going to talk about, and thanks you for the support on that Eaton Square matter. As you can see, I feel like it's a broken record each time that I start to talk, and as I start to talk with this, it's almost a broken record with the things we talk about, government not having things in order, cover-ups. It's like every situation. And I do want to apologize if I come across as being paranoid or one of those guys who just think there's something in my closet or under my carpet. No, it's not that. Folks, our government, especially the city government and the state, is so corrupt that when law enforcement do come around and look, they wear white suits, not because they might get, spoil the case or contaminate the evidence. It's that slimy here with the behavior. And I'm going to demonstrate that later in the next hour. But people are allegedly being sickened, as you know, at Eaton Square. The city, real briefly, the city was supposedly going to prosecute this individual for dumping contaminants in the water in violation of the city rules. Instead of doing that, they gave a permit and had conditions. Then, when we start to inquire, and the news stories come out, and we cover it on the show here, They then explained that they gave the wrong permit and the wrong conditions, and they didn't really sample the solution in the drain in the sewer area. They'd sample in the water that are solutions that were in bottles in the office, so therefore they can't prove that this person dumped it. If they had some proof that he dumped material down the drain, they would take legal action. Yet their investigators went and sampled, put dye tests in the works, documented all of that, and they still won't do anything. So this is the kind of government you are paying handsomely for, beautiful salaries and all kinds of things. So I guess it'll come get better for you if you vote the right way. Because what we have right now with Peter Carlisle and this cry from the cradle, Caldwell, you better watch yourself, guys. And I'm going to be able to demonstrate that. So if you listen to the next hour, I think you'll be entertained and insulted and be willing to take some action, if nothing else, is simply voting smart. So, again, this morning I have the pleasure of having Mr. Jan Weinberg in the studio with me. And Mr. Weinberg is an attorney here in Honolulu, and he specializes in personal injury. Now, we're not trying to sell you attorney services or legal services. We are. It is part of my effort to reach out and try and get and educate you and give you some information that will enhance your standings and your ability to navigate the roads of life as things, the bumps in the road. And we're going to talk about personal injury and how you can avoid things and some of the pitfalls and some of the advantages and, you know, all of that. Again, it's not a commercial. And feel free to call in 524-1080, or you can email me quickly at carol@carolcox.com, C-A-R-R-O-L-L, at C-A-R-R-O-L-L-C-O-X.com. And always, you can pick this up on carolcox.com. Jan, good morning.
Good morning, Carol.
Thank you for joining me. And if you would briefly tell us a little bit about, a lot about yourself, because I'm excited that you were willing to come in and share and impart some of your knowledge and expertise to the listeners.
Well, Carol, thanks for having me with you this morning. I've been a personal injury or a trial attorney in Hawaii since 1974.
Mm-hmm.
After I graduated from Harvard Law School, I came out to the islands on a vacation. And, you know, like everybody else, I fell in love with the place. It was just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I was supposed to go back to L.A. to begin a job with a law firm there. And before I left, a couple people said, you ought to go stop by and see this lawyer, Dave Shutter.
Mm-hmm.
He's an up-and-coming attorney. And I did stop by to see Dave Shutter, and he hired me. And I stayed. And what was supposed to be a two-week vacation became, I don't know how many years later, in Hawaii, raised two children here that are now 29 and 30, and made a career here for myself.
Mm-hmm.
At the beginning with Dave Shutter, Carol, one of my first cases was a wiretap, federal wiretap case.
Mm-hmm.
Where I was given a transcript to read of wiretapping, and the transcript read something like, on an indictment, 5-3, 5-3, to bugger come home, 5-3, the kind. And I was out of my mind. It was my first week in Hawaii, and I'm reading this transcript. I ran into another lawyer's office. I said, what is this, the kind? I don't understand. What's it mean? And Dave, the attorney I asked, looked over at me and said, Jan, what would you like it to mean? So that was kind of the beginning of the career, which then went into representing insurance companies for a larger firm, doing a number of trials for what I call the other side. Coming back and having several years again with Mr. Shutter, Dave Shutter, who by that time was the leading attorney in the state,
mm-hmm.
trying a bunch of cases, winning cases, being happy, and eventually going out on my own in mm-hmm. 1978. So that basically is how I started in Hawaii and how my own law firm got generated
mm-hmm.
back in the late 70s and continuing.
Mm-hmm. Now, What does a personal injury lawyer do, and what kind of cases, and how would a person determine if they need a personal injury? What would trigger that?
Well, first, let's say that 99.9% of the people that are involved in the cases, the last thing they were thinking of before being injured was the fact that they were getting injured, that an injury would occur. They're just running their lives, living their lives, getting by and having the best lives they can until something happens to them. Those somethings that happen can be a back injury at work, can be a car wreck in which they're left crippled, a medical case in which they're left brain injured, a construction case where somebody falls off a scaffold, or a crane has an issue and creates serious injuries, excavation injuries. So what it is people living their lives and having some sort of injury that either ends up being a work-related injury called workers' compensation or ends up being an injury that someone is found to be at fault for, which is called negligence or torts. And they find themselves in a very stressful situation, frequently without money coming in to pay for their bills, to cover their needs. And in that time, under a great amount of stress, they start looking for a lawyer and hopefully can find one that is skilled in the area or, you know, specializes in the area that the people need help in.
Is it just physical injury? Can it be psychological injury? Or what types of injuries can one experience?
For the most part, Carol, it is usually a bodily injury that leads to psychological injury and harm. If somebody intentionally commits or negligently commits conduct that causes severe emotional distress or severe mental anguish, those kind of actions can result in litigation. It could be that it's a defamation case where somebody defames you, or it could be outrageous conduct on the part of some person. Sometimes these happen in boards of associations of apartment owners where, you know, there are things said that are libelous or inflict emotional distress. So those cases are compensable. They're not the standard cases that one would see in negligence suits in the courts.
Let's say, I'll just kick around some ideas, and if you can adopt a response.
Do my best.
I'm an apartment owner, and I have the AOAO. And they make decisions that might harm me, or I believe has harmed me in some way financially. What would I do? What would be the best first steps to do, and what other steps should I follow up with?
Well, first a disclaimer that there are attorneys that do this kind of litigation day to day, and one of them just, who is a friend of mine, achieved a several million-dollar verdict on Maui against an owner's association and the owners of the development for abuse of powers over a period of time. For the average person faced with an abusive board of directors, I'm just speaking bluntly,
generally,
aside from reading the bylaws and the association bylaws and knowing what their rights are as owners of that association, if they get involved with finding a lawyer, just going to be blunt. Most of the time, the attorneys are going to charge by the hour. If they charge by the hour and take a retainer, the amount of attorney's fees that are going to be paid out for a homeowner are going to really exceed what I think most people should be paying. So the question is, do you get lawyers involved if you're an individual homeowner in an association having a problem? The answer is probably not. Not unless a number of tenants or owners have the same problem and can afford to pay for the hourly fees of attorneys who specialize in that area of work. The litigations, you know, Carol, litigation is very costly. So what would I do if I were a person having a problem, aside from knowing your rights and trying to get other owners together and electing a better board of directors, or possibly complaining to different agencies of the city and state, and you know how that goes? I would think that most of the efforts would be to replacing a board of directors that wasn't responsive.
So the alternative would be to seek corrective actions on through government agencies or other entities that may deal with those issues.
If there are issues of health or sanitation or different problems that relate to public mm-hmm. responsibilities, mm-hmm. For sure. And I can give you an example, and I don't okay. mean this to be, but a good friend of mine had an experience where a ring that was in his apartment was missing. It was a ring that meant a lot to this person, and he'd had it for 25 years in and out of his life, in pawn shops and out, but finally, you know, something he cared about a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
He suspected that a maintenance company working for the apartment had taken it and went on an absolute concentrated effort to get that ring back. And I never thought he would, and I never thought anything would be accomplished by it. In fact, I thought he was kind of crazy in doing this. But Carol, he concentrated his efforts. He went to board members, got a proxy to attend board meeting, contacted the media, a gamut of just mm-hmm. everything in the world you can imagine. And I laughed at him. I said, Ron, you know, you're taking up time and effort to pin this down. As it turned out, he ended up getting his ring back. He ended up with the company that did the maintenance contract being investigated in that building and in other buildings. He went out to breakfast with the head of the board of directors, and what turned into, mm-hmm. you know, an insane couldn't happen. In other words, he got relief because he put all of his single-minded efforts into making sure that he did the best he could to protect himself and also, as it turned out, other people in the apartment complex that were reported similar stories.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way he could have hired me. I'm his friend. I thought he was crazy for doing what he did. I mean, his focus on the issue mm-hmm. got him a result.
And probably the effort cost more than the ring, but it was it was sentimental, probably.
I can tell you, Carol, if he'd had a lawyer, it would have cost way more than the ring. So, again, a lot of it is a self-help and how much time do you have mm-hmm. to devote to how big a problem is it.
Now, there's various types. You could go to a doctor, get some kind of malpractice or whatever. Let's just kick around. I go into a store, grocery store, and I'm injured, a rat falls on me, or collapse, and what should I do to preserve my rights and to should I, if the management approach me and say, you know, look, I know that you got a big knot on your head, and you, let's just come on over here and I'll give you free groceries, what you have in your cart. Should a person succumb to that, or should they take the time? What should they do?
All right, well, thanks for asking. I'd like to step back from the issue and say that when you think about somebody slipping on a floor,
mm-hmm.
it's usually a cartoon character mm-hmm. That ends up flipping over about 8 times and falling, and it's kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
But falls are one of the leading causes of death from accidents in the United States. And falls to the elderly frequently result in a period of time in death. So mm-hmm. if an elder person falls and breaks a hip and ends up being immobile, it's a pretty good bet that that person's mortality is at issue.
Mm-hmm.
So what starts out being almost a joke, slip and falls or trip and falls, are actually a high frequency occurrence, more than they should, and can result in injuries that are really crippling. And, mm-hmm. and they include brain injuries, spinal cord injuries. People hit their head on the floor. It's called a concussion. It can be worse than that. And fractures.
Mm-hmm.
So let's take a day in the life of a person who goes into a supermarket and is walking along with a cart and suddenly ends up, you know, flat down on the floor
mm-hmm.
with part of their dress or part of their pants wet. And they're alone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the reality is that they're going to be so shaken up and they're going to be at a loss in those moments. The last thing they're going to be thinking of doing is protecting themselves.
Right.
I can almost guarantee you that most of the retail establishments, Carol, are not going to protect you in that kind of situation. They range. They can be mm-hmm. very courteous, mm-hmm. of course, and offer you to sit down and to call an ambulance and to take you where you want. But they're not going to go round up witnesses necessarily who have seen you fall or seen the mm-hmm. area on the floor that was wet. So that essentially the best you can do if you have your wits about you or a friend with you is to report the accident. That sounds, you know, kind of funny, but some people can slip and fall, think it's not much, and end up with a more serious back injury a day or two later.
Uh-huh.
So basically report the accident. Make sure there's a written report, and be very careful about how you state what happened in the report. Because if you do make a statement, that statement can later be used against you. If the store manager says, well, they said they weren't looking at the time that they fell, or they were involved in conversation with someone else and weren't, you know, paying attention. Mm-hmm. So you have to be pretty careful about how you accurately describe what happened.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those cases are going to end up in litigation if the injuries are serious. The stores usually have premises medical payment insurance of up to $5,000 and sometimes more.
Mm-hmm.
If you assert your claim, go to the risk management department of the particular establishment, whatever it is, and they'll have a risk management if they're a larger establishment, and make your claim for medical bill reimbursement. If you're more seriously injured, you have 2 years in which to file suit. And a lot of people, Carol, they think that if they fell, that it's somebody's fault. It's got to be somebody's fault.
Mm-hmm.
Not true. And kind of shocking to people. Well, there was water on the floor. Well, there are issues like, where did the water come from? How long was the water on the floor?
Mm-hmm.
What are the protocols for that business for their cleanup? Was it raining that day? Did they have mats out? Did they have warning signs out? Were there cones placed? So any retail store has an obligation to keep the premises reasonably safe for people that are going to enter it. But that is not the same thing as saying the store is going to pay for everyone who's injured, however seriously, that mm-hmm. falls in the store, or even falls because there's a substance on the floor. At that point, if you have a case, you're going to have to get a lawyer, and the lawyer's going to have to spend time and a significant amount of money litigating against the stores, which mm-hmm. generally, and if you take Walmart or any of the big, they fight these cases, to the end, to the bitter end.
Right.
So they just don't lie down and say, gee, thank you for calling, and here's a check, and sorry you got hurt. It's pretty much, we didn't do it. It's not our fault. You should have been looking more carefully. We don't even believe that you were injured. Now prove it.
Now, would it be prudent or smart on the, if let's say a senior citizen, to call a family member, if possible, to accompany them if they find themselves fallen, to have, because if you're injured, you're a little, would that be a wise thing to do?
Absolutely. It always helps in any kind of stressful situation, let alone this, to have a family member or friend come down and be your eyes and ears mm-hmm. and help you through the process.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question? Yeah, call it 1 second here. You're broken up there. You there? Barely can hear you, but what? Try and give you a question again. I'm sorry, I can't hear anything you say, caller. If you could, try another call, another line or something. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question? Sorry about that, folks. Things happen. The little phone bug But we got Francis here on the job. But anyway, call if you want to call back. It was very poor communication there. You know, speaking of being careful, there was a tort law review. They tried to deal with the tort law and what was it called? To limit the amount of
collection. Punitive damages.
Yes. Let's see. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Hi, good morning, Carol. Just a quick question. You know, if you're involved in a injury, say within a store or a shopping mall, and you happen to make a report with, say, the security people, is that report generally discoverable to the victim's attorney, or is that report privileged communication between the store and their attorneys? How does that work?
I'll direct it to Jan because I'm not the attorney. So,
okay,
well,
thank you.
It's a good question, and really, to some extent, it depends upon the particular store where you've been injured. They don't have to release it. They can be, reluctant or don't want to give you the security report or the store report. Many times, I've had clients who were given the report that they filed or that. Or it's obtainable before suit is filed. It's definitely obtainable after suit is filed when the documents are requested and have to be produced. You can request it. They may or may not give it to you. And there's not a whole lot you can do about it if they don't give it to you and you're not in a lawsuit where it has to be produced.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not privileged, per se. There's nothing about it that's privileged. It's just they may be nasty and decide that they don't want to make it available.
Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question for Jan?
Yeah, Carol, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yeah, I got a question. What if you get hurt on a federal base or land or whatever, and is it harder to get a claim through workman comp? And then what is the U.S. Labor Department involved in this?
Well, I'm assuming you're talking about being an employee of the federal government or just being...
Yeah, DOD.
Yeah, there's... again, this isn't my area of expertise. Within the area of workers' compensation attorneys, there's another subgroup. It's very, very limited to federal workers' compensation. They have their own set of laws, their own procedures, their own pay schedule. And normally, if you're a federal employee injured at work and you file a federal workers' compensation claim, you're barred from suing the employer. So you can't get workers' compensation and then say that the government was negligent in maintaining the property where you were injured or otherwise caused your injury. So you have to find a federal workers' compensation attorney if you have a more significant injury. And as I've said, over the years, that's been a really small percentage of the bar in Hawaii, sometimes one or two people or three people seem to be handling those kind of cases, but it would be a federal workers' comp case.
Yeah, when I got hurt, I had to go get an attorney from San Francisco who specialized in the federal sector.
Well, yeah, you're kind of confirming what I'm saying because I know that even the attorneys who did it over here are ancient by now, and it's really hard to find them. So people go to the mainland for those attorneys and for Social Security disability type of work. Many times I've had clients or former clients who end up with attorneys from California. I hope he was able to help you.
Yeah, I was able to get surgery and improve my injury and whatnot, so I was released and I didn't have to collect any money, but you know, I'm okay now.
I'm sure it was pretty stressful while it was going on.
Yeah, it was, yeah. Well, thanks for your answer and everything.
Okay, I wish you well.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, 524-1080 is the number if you have a question for Mr. Jan Weinberg. He's an attorney here on personal injuries. So, Jan, back to that tort law.
Yeah. Well.
I know there was a great argument that people being injured were getting too much money for this. What can you speak to that, and how does it affect cases today?
Well, it's a common perception, but... I'd like to kind of address it maybe a little more broadly. There's an area called punitive damages.
Mm-hmm.
So back in the 1980s and 90s, when punitive damages, that is, those are extra damages when someone's conduct has been outrageous.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say a corporation like Ford manufactured Pintos, mm-hmm. and the Pintos gas tanks were placed close to the rear of the vehicle and in a position so that if they were struck at mm-hmm. even low impacts, relatively low impacts, there could be an explosion. And there was an explosion. Mm-hmm. And four people burned to death in the explosion, or three people, in a horrible collision in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And the case went to trial, and the verdict was for $120 million in punitive damages. And the jury was very, very precise, because $120 million is what Ford saved by the way that it placed its gas tanks in an unsafe position. That case ultimately settled for $4.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a lot of cases in the last 20 years, Carol, that have involved the potential for punitive damages, I did thorough research in all the jurisdictions in the cases where there had been big numbers posted on the board for huge punitive damages, and in most of those cases, they were either reversed by an appellate court so that the plaintiff was back down in court doing it all over again
mm-hmm.
at enormous expense, that one out of maybe hundreds of those cases would actually collect the punitive damages, that they were very difficult to collect. And then finally, with punitive damages, the Supreme Court about 5 or 6 years ago in a leading decision kind of said, we're going to apply a ratio test. Unless your damages for punitive damages are at or less than 10 to 1, it's kind of a ridiculous test, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
If they're at or less than 10 to 1, you stand a chance of having them sustained on appeal. But if they're more than 10 to 1, they're likely to be struck down as excessive.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a case where you have mostly emotional distress damages, or let's say an insurance company has breached a contract and your damages are, let's say, $50,000. If you're going to litigate and the most you can get is $500,000 mm-hmm. after an appeal and it costs $100,000 to litigate the case, in other words, they put a real ceiling on punitive damages, made it much more difficult to obtain them and more difficult to collect on them. Example, Steve Hisaka, I think, was on your show
mm-hmm.
maybe
regarding
a couple
the
months
Moon
ago.
Brothers.
Mm-hmm. He handled a case on the Big Island where the person was a paraplegic, had been injured in 2000. Case went to trial around 2006. The jury in Hilo returned a verdict against a manufacturer of a seatbelt restraint for $19 million. It went up on appeal to the Intermediate Court of Appeals and ultimately to the Supreme Court, where it was completely reversed.
Mm-hmm.
So that it sounded great at the time, but the person really waited from the year 2000 to the year 2011 to be compensated in a confidential settlement. And so the $19 million was in no way collected.
Mm-hmm.
It was a verdict that the Hilo jury considered to be appropriate. But so you read about that, and you go, wow, $19 million, and man, you know, let's get going here. You know, well, why did that? Well, many times they actually don't get the money.
Mm-hmm.
Or they settle for fractions of what that verdict is.
Mm-hmm.
Some cases, quite frankly, if there's an incompetent attorney representing the defendant and the right kind of jury, you can max out on an award and do a lot better than if you have a competent attorney
mm-hmm.
who's adequately defending them. But for the most part, quite frankly, people in some ways really don't get enough. I can explain that later if you want.
Okay, all right.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080. 524-1080.
Okay, again, this is the Carol Cox Show here on KWAI, and my guest is Mr. Jan Weinberg, attorney, and we're talking about personal injury, and he is a personal injury attorney, and just left talking about torts and what have you and reform. But a lot of the companies, I noticed in the past, would play up on this, and you'd see the original ruling, and they'd come out screaming, kicking, and we need reform. We need reform. How dare I give a lady a couple million dollars for spilling a cup of coffee in her lap at McDonald's? And so we hear that, and some people respond by saying, yeah, that is too much for that. But the reality is, in great many of these cases, it's not paid out, but they played it up.
My head spun around. As anybody ever mentions the McDonald's case, everybody knows about it. Mm-hmm. Every lawyer knows about it. Every person knows about it. Here's another side of that story that nobody really wants to hear, and quite frankly, people may go to sleep as I tell it. But it goes like this. If you're in trial, every lawyer may ask, many lawyers are going to ask the jury when they're picking them, has anybody ever heard of the McDonald's verdict? And hands shoot up.
Mm-hmm.
And the main reason they're doing that is to find out that if anybody has been so tainted by what they heard about the McDonald's verdict that there's absolutely no way you want to have them sitting on your jury. You're not going to start to educate them about the McDonald's verdict because people don't want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
But, Carol, I'm telling you, the Wall Street Journal, a very conservative business paper,
mm-hmm.
wrote an editorial the first year after the McDonald's verdict, supporting the verdict, the Wall Street Journal. Now, nobody wants to hear this, and I'd never do it facing a jury. All the lawyers want to know is who's so affected by it that they're not going to be a fair juror. The reason was that McDonald's had 180 complaints of superheating their coffee that had led to third-degree burns. The woman had a third-degree burn in her groin. She had four mm-hmm. surgical procedures involving skin flap replacement. The jury verdict reflected probably $150,000 or so, or more than six figures in medical bills.
Mm-hmm.
And the play on the case was, God, what kind of world do we live in where somebody spills a coffee cup and then blames it on McDonald's and gets $680,000 as a verdict? And the Wall Street Journal, again, a business publication, mm-hmm. for the most part, you know, a conservative, supported it. Nobody wants to hear that, and certainly when you're picking a jury, if I started to say, well, argue, you know, that was a fair verdict because you're gone. I mean, people, what it represents is a symbol that the system is crazy, that people get way too much, that it's a rigged system,
mm-hmm.
That it's insane. But it really does a lot of unnecessary damage to who juries are and what they do. And,
mm-hmm.
and I'd like to elaborate on that, if I could. I have sat behind many one-way mirrors observing jurors deliberate in what we call mock jury cases. I mean, people are called in to decide issues that are similar to the lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
They're there for a day. They get a mini version of a trial. And you stand behind the one-way mirror pulling your hairs out as they go through the deliberation process. What you find out, and what most people find out if they've ever been on a jury, and I'd like to hear from people who have,
mm-hmm.
is that it's much more impressive than you think. One person has a perspective. 12 people is a little community. And they begin to put the picture together. They begin to weed out the nutty people who have, like, theories. And by the time they're done the deliberative process, many times they've done things that really reflect what needs to be done in the case. To the best of their abilities, they take it very, very seriously,
mm-hmm.
in some cases more seriously than judges, because it's their one time on the jury. They don't do this 5 days a week, you know, 52 weeks a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you have to serve on a jury or watch them in action, if that were possible, to understand what a great system it is. It is not a runaway system, and if most of the juries make their decisions based on the evidence, and you really have to get very specific about the case and what is it that resulted in that verdict. So what I'm saying is the jury system is probably the greatest
mm-hmm.
system for justice in the world.
So the person that's injured, if he get good representation, he the best thing is to just be patient, because it sounds like it's going to be at least what we might think might take a couple of months, could be a couple of years. And that's not just due to some tactic on the part of the party being sued, or is sometimes the process itself with the experts and what have you.
Let me, you know, give you you're right, Carol. I mean, it is not simple, it is not fast, and it is not easy. If you are seriously injured and have to file suit, it could be 3 to 6 months before the case has even been investigated and you've reached a plateau in your recovery, or at a point where the injuries can be diagnosed your future prognosed. So the lawsuit can go on easily for a year and a half or two. There's always, or more, there's always the prospect of an appeal, which looms overhead. If the other side gets a bad result for it, it may decide to appeal the matter, which can tie cases up for another year or two. The poor people that are going through this process, they need to have an aggressive representation. They need to have attorneys that the other lawyers are afraid to go to trial with. So a track record for results, so that the other side knows that they can't keep getting this case closer and closer to the door of trial in order to intimidate the opposition, you, whoever your attorney is. And they have to know how to effectively time your case and get the right experts so that it's appropriate to settle for good value and not fail to recognize the extent of the injuries. So more and more cases today end up in mediation prior to trial. More and more cases today end up settling at mediation. But the only way they settle, Carol, is because they're ready to go to trial.
And trial. And if you've got a good lawyer, that's going to be dogged, and you're better served.
You have to have one. If you don't have one, you're already, you know, up against the wall and not likely to have a good outcome.
For the listeners out there, 524-1080 if you have any questions or comments. But speaking of lawyers and choosing and representation, how are lawyers in these instances compensated, and how does one, a client, agree? There are a variety of compensations and manners which they're paid for. Can you explain a few of them?
Sure. In the area of personal injury, cases are done on contingency fees 99.9% of the time. And I'll explain that in a minute if I can. What is a contingency fee and how does it operate? So a contingency fee is if a person comes in and they've been injured, let's say in a construction accident, and they've had three surgeries on their back, and it's seen as a case that has potential to be a very large case. The attorney will normally sit down and explain that they're going to represent the client for one-third of the ultimate recovery, plus they're going to spend costs and get costs reimbursed at the end of the case as well. What kind of costs are they? To adequately represent people who are injured, you have to have physicians who are going to be willing to evaluate your client and to express very specific opinions about their injuries and their future. Life care planner to talk about what the costs of maintaining and treating the conditions that are permanent, and the costs can be staggering. Those have to be evaluated fully. Vocational rehabilitation counselors can get involved. Economists are there to calculate the damages in precise numbers. It goes on and on. So to adequately prepare a case, you have to be willing to pay those experts. That's usually out of a lawyer's pocket. And at the end of the day, 2 years later, if the lawyer is successful and there is a recovery that's acceptable, they'll take one-third or up to 40%, depending on the case, plus their costs back. And then the so that would be normally the standard contingency fee arrangement.
Now, quite often people say, well, that lawyer took too much, but that lawyer has to, or he or she, they must do the best job they can because they are licensed in the state and they are responsible to the client. And if they fail, the client then can turn around and take action against them. So sometimes I chuckle that I wouldn't want to be a lawyer because you could do the best job and you still get hit over the head, or you give the appearance that you're trying to, milk
right.
the turnip dry.
The best laid plans of mice and men, Afghan aglay. Things happen.
Yeah.
But if my experience over the years, if you have a good relationship, if you're hardworking, you do the right things for your clients, and you have a record of results, any lawyer who says they've won every case is a liar, or they mm-hmm. haven't taken on any cases that have any challenge to them.
Mm-hmm.
But a good lawyer, you're going to have a good relationship with him, you're going to trust, he will earn your trust, or she, and at the end of the day, hopefully, get you compensation.
Mm-hmm. Caller, good morning. You have a comment or question for Mr. Weinberg?
Yes, I have a question.
Yes.
What is the possibility of filing a case? My husband, when he was in the hospital at the Palimomi,
yes.
he fell from his bed. But this happened March 16, 2005. I didn't do anything. And my friends have been, telling me you should have filed a case against the hospital.
Well, first, I'm sorry that this happened, and it's not the type of incident that you're the only family it's happened to. That these happen, many times a year. We're called by patients who weren't properly cared for, who fell out of beds that should have been under more protection due to their condition. Well, you are late in filing suit.
Too late, yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
See,
to
I'm just
say
by
that.
Myself, that's why. No relatives, no to advise me. And at that time, I was, kind of really...
shaken up.
That's right. So I said, and I was doing pretty good, financially. So, but now that my husband passed away,
sorry
and it's just by myself, it's kind of hard to, yeah.
Yeah,
so, but if it's too late, then I just have to accept it.
It is too late, unfortunately, under the statute of limitations.
Oh, I see. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you for calling in.
Sure.
Thank you, caller, and thanks for listening.
Thank you.
Aloha.
Yes, bye bye.
Now, again, in the spirit of this isn't not a commercial, but I will assure myself that. Others will be asking me, well, how do I get in touch with Mr. Weinberg, or how does one contact you if they were interested in...
Well, I'll give you, I've had an office in downtown Honolulu for years. I'm now in the Dillingham Transportation Building, and my phone number is 523-9477. Everyone who calls about a potential case is going to receive a free case evaluation informally. I certainly can't look at all the documents and hear every fact about the case, but I can get an impression of the case.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm not appropriate to handle the case, I frequently recommend other attorneys who are reputable so that the people get a chance to be heard and to have every opportunity to get an attorney of their choice to represent mm-hmm. them.
So 523-9477 if they've... And again, if it's worth asking, because here's a case right now, the young lady just called and having that incident, and it's worth checking, or call any lawyer, but at least preserve your rights, because statute of limitation and the way the rules are set up.
Most of the statute of limitations for people who were injured in Hawaii is 2 years from the date of the incident.
Mm-hmm.
So in California, it's a year. In Hawaii, you have 2 years from the date you were injured in which to file suit for many, many claims.
Now, why is the state of Hawaii so generous? And
Hawaii actually has always had a very, it has conservative juries. We're a conservative community. We're not downtown Los Angeles where a verdict might come back for $20 million. In Hawaii, the jurors tend to be conservative about financial matters, but very liberal about the rights that people have and making sure that people's rights are adequately protected.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's good and bad. The good is that it is a nice jurisdiction, or a favorable jurisdiction if people are injured. We have some very liberal law in certain areas of products liability and that are favorable to plaintiffs. as opposed to other jurisdictions. So the 2 years, quite frankly, I think the year is very, a year limitation is very harsh. By the time people get over the initial shock, deal with the problems they have, try to look for an attorney, in the middle of all the financial and other problems they're experiencing, that year goes by way too fast.
Well, that triggers a fire drill that no one wants to be a part of.
Yeah.
Even 2 years might be, because you may not have the complications that show up or reveal themselves.
That's true, and there are cases where people have had a concussion, for example, and I'm talking about maybe a more serious, what they call head injury, which is actually a traumatic brain injury. And there can be little differences in the person's behavior, attention span, concentration, memory, irritability. And you see a drop-off, but it's subtle. And so it may not really appear for 6 months. People may not be able to recognize that the person they love is no longer quite the same because it masks itself. So in that sense, injuries can develop over time that are then diagnosed, or injuries that appear to be not as serious turn out to be more so. On the other hand, there are people that look like they're catastrophically injured. They still have lawsuits, but some of them manage to make a very good medical recovery. So each case really is different.
Good. Well, we're going to come back in the second hour and we'll talk. I really appreciate you joining me, and it's always exciting, and people really appreciate. I don't really understand the value of it until after, when I'm seen on the street and someone say, or they'll call or send an email, and that gives me that warm and cuddly feeling that I'm doing something that's worthwhile, and I appreciate you joining me.
I hope I help. Thanks
for
having me.
We'll never know until that call comes in or someone, but it all knowledge is beneficial to everybody, I would think. And I also, a friend of ours, Calvin Griffin, just joined us in the studio, and he's going to be coming back on air in the near future, right? And he'll stay around in the next hour, and Jan will be here, and I'll be talking about it, and I want to make sure these comments that you hear later is generated by me, for me, and it is my statements and not theirs. But I think you'll find it pretty interesting and rewarding. Allegations of shredding documents. Now, government wouldn't shred documents, would they? And, all of those things. Former drug trafficker working for the chairman of the city council here, and who was found guilty. And man, this is going to be pretty good. But do join me. And if nothing else, we'll have it and try to figure out this puzzle. So please feel free to join me, and at least do join me. And we'll be right back.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108. It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Good morning again, and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. 524-1080 is the number if you want to call in and have comment, and you might. And, you know, I've talked about, again, I want to thank Mr. Jan Weinberg for joining me in the first hour, talking about some legal issues and how to navigate life's highways when it comes to a legal matter and personal injury. But as I promise you, and you know that I'm always going to the government offices and looking for documents so that I can better be informed, so that I can better inform you. I don't like to just preach and teach and cause mass hysteria and have you fearful and tell you the booger bears are in government. And if they are there, I want to put a name and a face on the booger bears, because no such thing as a booger bear, but there can be corrupt people that find their way in the government. So I use those terms and descriptions lightly and interchangeably. This one here, I just got, and mind you, these are allegations, but they're consistent with what I've experienced here with this office, for example, the office that Mr. Sam Moku runs now, the Department of Community Services. And I've talked extensively about grants and the benefit package grants that we talked about and their willingness to not collect money but let money lapse, go back into general funds and what have you, and charge me for blank documents and blank papers and delay. And so I decided to look further anyway, and the head of that department at one time was Mr. Ernie Martin, who in turn somehow found his way in the city council. He got enough people to vote for him. And I've said, and I say it again, based on the information that I've received and his behavior and all the questionable behavior that exists here and the people he surrounds himself, I, in my opinion, believe that this man is simply not made for government and public service. I call in question his integrity, and I will state that, and he can come and challenge me, sue me, and come on the show and talk about it, but I just cannot sit and watch it unfold. So let me just give you a name right quick, and other sources have written about this, and I won't duplicate their efforts, but the name Chats Sunayoshi. Now, Chats Sunayoshi was involved and found guilty in the trafficking of cocaine. Now, if you can believe this, this gentleman is actually identified on Ernie Martin's State of Hawaii Campaign Spending Commission's report as the treasurer. And now, remember now, he was involved in a major drug trafficking investigation and found guilty and was sent to jail and what have you, and as well as others. Now, this is not to say that just because you were guilty in that situation, you're doing something illegal now. But I raise this and point out this relationship because if a person, and not to maim him, but if a person of this standing can be so close and have the openness of government, and yet I, as a citizen who has a clean, impeccable record, I have to jump through hoops and hurdles just to get them to answer the phone. Now, this was an import of drugs and smuggling of drugs and trafficking of drugs. So I just think that it's laughable and ask myself, well, maybe he's using Chad on his staff or involved in his campaign, Mr. Ernie Martin is, because Chad has some expertise in export and import. Or maybe in the prescription of drugs or something, you know, when those hard days of out there stomping on the campaign path, so you need a good pharmacist. I don't know, but it raises some real serious questions. And then Mr. Sunayoshi's wife is hired by Ernie Martin. And you remember me telling you that there's a circle of friends and the nepotism. And if you could, if you would just share with me your thoughts on this, does this come near or can it be described as nepotism or should we be concerned as I go on through this? 524-1080 is the number. But I'm looking at just one thing here, March 9th, dated to the Campaign Spending Commission. The candidate's name is Friends of Ernie Martin, Office Sault City Council, person in charge of fundraiser, Chad Sunayoshi. And they're going to have a contribution suggested of $1,000. And there were others. Remember this name. I talked to her about her, Lori Okami. Lori Okami works at the Department of Community Services, where we talked about the benefit grants. And there are other grants involved in there. And I got an email. And mind you now, this is allegation. These are allegations. But I will be following up on them. And as things have taken place in the past, they do come to truth. Very rarely does anybody bother to send me something that is not accurate. But this is painful. And maybe this is why you would need a pharmacist to try and deal with this on your staff. The attorney, the the claim is, this letter, this email, is that Community Services Corporation Counsel lawyer Gordon Nelson directed staff of Jimmy Lota or Ernie Martin's good friend to shred one pile of files. Now, remind you, this is an allegation. This is, but I've called Sam Moku for comments, and I've called him on other occasions, and he gives me the cold shoulder, and you see what happens when you give me the cold shoulder. I go away. Keep another pile. This is a, he tells him, this is the allegations, to shred one pile of files and keep another pile to send to Mark Chandler of HUD, since HUD is auditing this department, and another pile under one of the other workers' desk, who is doing Ernie Martin, there's a gentleman mentioned in here, Keith Ishida and Randy Wong's job. Now, the nepotism is, this claim is that Mike is married to Gail Keito, who is a division chief of 51 Merchant Street in charge of Section 8 HUD, and that is what they're being audited under. I am concerned that the chairman of the city council, Ernie Martin, having Sunyoshi is his right on his staff, no problem, nothing illegal, nothing unethical. I contacted Sunyoshi's wife, Heidi Sunyoshi, who works for Ernie Martin, and asked her some questions about, you see, they have a Kupuna and Keiki Services, a nonprofit corporation. And I wanted to get to the bottom of that and find out how is this, does this organization get any donations or grants from the Community Services Department? I don't know, but they won't answer my questions, and they drag their feet. So I contacted Heidi at Mr. Martin's office. She assured me she would answer the questions. To date, I've not received anything, but an interesting thing is happening. Now, I never spoke to her husband, Chad Sunyoshi, but he was compelled to call around and figure out why I'm interested in his nonprofit and who would have disclosed to me that he has a nonprofit or affiliated with that. And I got to just take the opportunity to just say to you, if you're listening, Chad, and I'm sure you're either listening or we'll hear it later, the internet, there's a thing called the internet while you were gone and incarcerated, it came about, and it's pretty efficient. And believe it or not, Chad, just all you have to do is type in your name or the last name and Keiki Kupuna, and you'll get things like this. The company contact is Heidi Sunyoshi, which is the principal of the organization. That's what is said, and just sharing with you so you don't have to call around and asking who told. It is that simple. And so in doing that, I'm still I don't want to sound like I'm going off on a tangent here, but this is very relevant because millions of your tax dollars being handled by, or mishandled, I should say, by this department. So Martin brings Moku, speaks up for him, and then Carlisle keeps him on staff, hires him. Then Moku hires Cliff LeBoy, who I described to you, owes the city money, because as the records that they provided me shows that he did not account for the monies that were spent, as well as many others. And then I'm learning from some of the nonprofits that they actually submitted original documents, but those documents were shredded by this department of Community Services. And so they can't bring these documents in now because they don't exist. And so they're struggling to get the records and show. So just so that, just as a quick, found guilty, this is in June 15, 1999, so that you'll know that I'm not just blowing smoke. Four men convicted in widespread drug ring found guilty yesterday of conspiracy to possess and distribute more than 150 kilograms of cocaine were Chad Sunyoshi, Sosaya Leofau, Seal Tommy Hafoka and Richard Brown, Tommy Poe, I guess his name. Can you imagine? You and I can't get these dudes to return a phone call, and yet we have now, I guess, the expert pharmacist and expert import businessman advising the chairman of the city council. The chairman of the Honolulu City Council has incorporated. He hires his wife to work on his staff, Mr. Suniyoshi's wife, which is okay, nothing illegal about it. But ethics and the inference and the mere appearance, and when you're dealing with public records, public documents, public matters, public affairs, it should be above any questions, okay? So, again, there's this big ring, and I warn you about it. So I went down, and I'm checking around to see. You don't want to maim someone and falsely accuse them and infer anything, but I have a right to ask questions, and if you don't answer, I have a right to continue to express my opinion, and that I will do. The Kupuna Keiki, so I went down the BREG, and I pull up the documents, and this is the nonprofit that Chad, whom I've never spoken with, was inquiring of others, how did I learn about his nonprofit? So the current agent information name, so that Chad, you can save some brain cells and run around trying to figure out who told, nobody tell me anything. Name of its current registered agent is Heidi Suniyoshi. That's in public records. You can just walk up to the window and ask for it. So it didn't take an FBI kind of mindset. You just go up, knock on the door, and pay your 25 cents for the page. But here's an interesting thing. You know, I told you about nepotism, the circle of friends that we talk about often. So there's a new player involved in the game, Martin Hahn, who is running now for city council out of the Kalihi district. Now, Martin Hahn is tied in with this Kupuna Keiki and Keiki Services organization. Now, why would Martin Hahn be involved? Well, I went further to check, and he is shown as the new registered agent. So if you look around, you really wouldn't find some glaring, open-faced statement connecting Chad Suniyoshi with this organization, and you would have to know where to look to find that even his wife was affiliated with this. But they give an address on these articles of incorporation at 1124 20th Avenue, Honolulu, in a post office box of 10915. This is for the Kupuna Keiki Services. This is one of the addresses that reflects that it has something to do with Chad Suniyoshi or a resident of some sort. But, again, there's another address, 3131 Castle Street. So in checking all of these records, I find that Kupuna Keiki Services, while you won't find, these are the officers now, and this is another little tidbit, Martin Hahn, who's the candidate now for city council, and there's a new name who's running for state house, Rosabella Rose, as better known, Martinez, and there's Amanda Sakai. So you won't find Heidi's name, or you won't find Chad's name being attached to or affiliated with this organization, unless you go and you check and you see the BREG or name registration. You'll find 3131 Castle Street in Honolulu. Well, I went by there, and what it is, folks, is an empty lot with the mailbox there, and it's being operated by the Kaimuki, I think, auto services or something of that nature. They own the property. There was a house there, but the records show here that it's 3131 Castle. Well, again, you might ask, how is Chad Suniyoshi tied in with that? Well, so I do some more checking. Nobody called and told me these things now, just so that you can save brain cells. I do more checking. I find that Chad Suniyoshi is the agent for a company called Platinum Activities, LLC. And just so happened, and I guess maybe coincidental. Who knows? In this town, anything could happen. But just some strange coincidence that that Platinum Activities is actually located at 3131 Castle Street, which is an empty lot, which is the same address given by the Kupuna and Keiki services. So, boy, what an elaborate web we have woven here with this. And again, there is the brother of Friends of Martin Hahn who donates to, and this name is Kurt Sunyoshi, who is the owner of the, it's a limo company. So you can see now, mind you, you might say, how dare I make such suggestions or take the liberty of doing this and saying that there's corruption. No, I'm saying that this is a measly, simple city council job, but you have these types of maneuvering occurring as if it's some military strategy or something. You can't get that many people trying to hustle to the public water hole and the trough. There's money involved. There's influence. And I'm even getting calls saying that this guy is Chad is involved in communicating with numerous campaigns. I don't have anything in hand, but we will be checking. But we're talking about ethics and values and morals and what have you. And it sounds like I'm all over the place, but I checked the records for campaign spending. And the campaign spending shows for Martin Hahn, fundraiser, 9/22/11. He's going to, on that was the date, Platinum Room. But he also did not mention that he had a Zumba with Martin Hahn on January 15, 2012. There was only two listed on the formal state website for a notice to hold fundraising. Those dates were 9/22/11 and 4/7/12. Again, here's one that's saying, come Zumba with Martin Hahn at Kalihi Waena Street. And again, it says here, Martin Hahn for City Council. This is a ticket that's on the website. So obviously, I will be following up with the Campaign Spending Commission. And why? Because if the people can't get it right, we don't need them in government. If this is your out of the rumper room, or this is your first time running, and you're trying to get in office, your background and your behavior should be impeccable. It should stand up to the test. And when you have nonprofit organizations. And I'm curious, how do you get tied in with this, and why would this gentleman be concerned that I'm asking questions? And I note that it was the Hawaii Free Press did an extensive article, hawaiifreepress.org, I think, did an extensive story on this Mr. Walden, on Mr. Sunyoshi and Arnie Martin and all of the others. And in that, It discloses quite a bit, the who's involved with this. So my question is, why is it this way? Now, this earlier email that I got where I told you they're supposedly shredding, and the question is, why is it that Sam Moku refuses to openly respond to my queries, as I think I have a right to when I inquire. I think the public has a right to know what's happening to the money. And I'm hoping some of the nonprofits, I just got off the phone with one and others. Again, where does this all lead back to? Mr. Mufi Hanneman, because remember, he had Sam Moku, not Sam Moku, but Arnie Martin working for him at the time. And as you know, Martin, as I reported, was instrumental in helping others, nonprofits that are pro-rail, such as Maida Timpson and others out there in Kapolei. help them author their 501c3, which in turn they would get money from the organization or the agency that he was working with or for, or acting as deputy. So there is some really insane claims here and allegations that, for example, he was able to get his, Ernie Martin got his law degree while faking work and wasting city money going to school during afternoons, that time of no law school classes were scheduled. Now, again, am I being reckless? No, I have contacted Ernie Martin's office. I have inquired with Heidi. You know, some of the media in town say, well, they didn't respond, so therefore we're not going to cover it. Well, that's a prerogative and that they can have, but I, as a citizen, believe that I should be able to ask questions and get answers, or at least be respectful and respond and just tell me no or something, but not to call in and I ask the questions, and instead of responding back, the spouse, former drug dealer, trafficker, pharmacist, whatever, gets free roam to go around and ask those people inquiring as to, did they tell me that he had a nonprofit organization. That sounds like he still have that streak of something in him that people should be wary of or afraid of. And here at the Carol Cox Show, we're looking for the truth. And if the truth costs something, then that's what it'll cost. But I don't believe that we should be involved. There should be a major investigation. I believe that Peter Carlisle made a grave error and mistake and missteps by keeping these people on and bringing in these people, Moku and others. Good morning, caller. Comment or question?
Hello, my name is Richard DeConte. I'd like to talk about Chairman Martin.
Go ahead.
He is the one who has said in the newspaper recently that the Nestor Garcia's fine and embarrassment is sufficient. Well, you should ask these questions. Who went with Mufi to Washington, D.C. to get steel wheel on steel? Who killed Monorail Maglev Hotline Steelist? Who wanted to kill Alilo Broadcasting from the city council live? Who wanted to raise summer fund from $25 to $75 per child? And now I have two documents. One is from April 20th, 2008, with the anti-transit councilwoman Barbara Marshall absent because of a family emergency. Eight council members were evenly divided in whether to endorse, and of course, Nestor Garcia was one of those. After touring, this is from Mr. Oberstar, after touring the route by helicopter, it would be the most efficient light rail project in the country. And now, more recently, May 10th, Thursday, voting against the measure to kill the heart dies from lack of council votes. Who voted against it? Nestor Garcia, Breen, Stanley Chang, and Ernie Martin. Mm-hmm. And now I'm looking at one page of disclosures, just one page of, I don't know, 40 or 50. 21 out of 21 times Nestor Garcia had to offer disclosures. 21 out of 21 times on this page. Now, it was for bills 40, 41, 42, 43, 4, 5, 7, 50, 51, 52, 53, I'm not going to go on.
Mm-hmm.
Ernie Martin feels that Nestor Garcia has received. Nestor Garcia has deceived the most wonderful people in the world here in Hawaii, and he is far, far more guilty. Mufi, Carlisle, Garcia, Hanimoto, they're all in it together, collusion.
Mm-hmm.
And I support you 100%. I would do whatever I could to try to help you in any endeavor. You speak the truth, and God bless you.
Well, thank you. Folks, the problem here is that, again, I'm not a paranoid person, and paranoia is healthy, I'm told by psychiatrists. But I'm still healthy, and if I don't speak out, then I guess I'd become paranoid. But again, why are they, you know, it's not that I'm saying that they're having a party at their own little private club.
Yeah.
I'm saying they are trying to migrate and find their little niche and set up an enclave within government.
Yes.
That's the problem, and why this is so glaring, and it's a vivid picture of if they're not criminal in their behavior now, it lends itself to the climate. It invites this kind of behavior. And then when you and maybe this gentleman, Mr. Sunayoshi, has redeemed himself and met God and Buddha and all of those things and cleansed, and he will never be tempted to do that. And I would just say that how was he vetted? Can we be assured that we can trust? I know that if he was on parole, they kept him. You looked at that. But yeah. Is that temptation?
Yes.
And I don't know. But it's how this circuitous route that they take. It's not open. It's not transparent. And when you inquire, they don't respond back. And, for example, Lori Akami, there's been extensive articles written about her.
Yeah.
And, again, let me describe to you folks. I can call her up. Now, I have a right to look at documents, walk in on normal hours, 8 to 5,
yes.
And look at documents. But when I call in and make that request, she will then in turn, okay, and glad hand me. And then when I call to inquire about the documents, oh, I talked to Sam Moku. He said that you must put it in writing. So the clock starts all over again.
Yeah.
So then she claims she had nothing to do with these grants, when in fact she had everything to do with it. And she was working on his campaign. She refused to answer, but I did find that in 2010 and 2012 supplemental July 1, December 31, 2011 report, Lori Okami, she reports that she spent money for envelopes for thank yous for the Ernie Martin, friends of Ernie Martin. So she's been, and what was her reward? She needed a job. So he puts her in under Sam Moku.
Yes. I understand, and I can give you empirical evidence in terms of a stamp envelope with my name given to Roger Morton for the bus. Has any money been diverted from the bus or the van to be used for the rail? Nothing. Reply in 6 months. 3 months later, I asked him directly the same question. He said nothing, but Yoshioka said, no money has been diverted. If you take a pie, 100% pie, and you split it between bus and van, and you get 50%, 60-40, whatever the arbitrary percentage is, and now you introduce rail, are you telling me no money has been taken from the bus or the van?
Mm-hmm.
And now if you put one contingency fund upon another in order to satisfy a sound financial federal plan, are you telling me no? 40, 50 buses down, 2 hours wait last week in front of City Hall, two calls. Do not blame the driver. Do not blame the people who took. But there was not enough vans.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why isn't there more vans? Mr. Black is powerless. He has no power. He would do much more if he could. The problem lies with Yoshioka to Carlisle.
Mm-hmm.
And they simply are conning the public. It's propaganda. We don't need heavy rail. As I just mentioned before, it says light rail. And they've converted this into a monstrosity. It's aesthetically, it's ethically wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I support what you're saying. And I've got so much more. I've got 100, 200 documents in front of me.
Well, feel free to give me an email or send me an email, and we can talk later and maybe arrange.
I have no computer, so I'll write you a letter.
Send me a letter or give me a call, and maybe we can rendezvous, and I'll buy you a cup of coffee or two.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for calling. Now, again, someone said, well, you know, if you stop listening, I would never know it. But I do care that if you find this to be offensive, if you find this to be unsettling or not palatable to you, this is who I am. This is the Carol Cox Show. And I do this because no one will grab hold of the little threads that are hanging off of this beautiful sweater, as it appears. and expose the bed bugs that lie beneath. And this is what's happening. You cannot sit back and when there's the handwriting, I'm numb when it comes to thinking about former city prosecutor would engage and just lend himself to this kind of behavior that these people can flock and migrate as if they're a flock of geese going north. And he's not alarmed. Something in his natural instinctive behavior as an attorney, as a city prosecutor, as an ethical man, should have gone off. He should have been going, rushed to the hospital. But instead, I look and see here at the candidate committee notice of intent to hold a fundraiser, Gene Moku, who I understand, and I could be, I don't know, in this city you don't know, but I understand she retired. And the sister of Sam Moku was a person in charge of Peter Carlisle's fundraiser from May 9th, 2012. Again, see, Peter wasn't just duped and felt that he had to hurry and take care of your matters and the city matters because he was bringing this ingenious, these ingenious ideas, and he was raring to go. So don't mind the small things. Peter Carlisle is as complicit in this process. He will not seek to recover the monies that from the benefit package. HUD is auditing. He should demand that Sam Moku resign and open these documents up and these files that are hidden on the desk and what have you and being shredded. He should demand resignation. He should demand of all parties that were affiliated in this process have benefited, that have gotten grants and now employed by the city and county of Honolulu but refuses to pay back or want. This is real, real bad. And, again, they talked about Ben Cayetano accepting some exorbitant amount of monies. Ben didn't go to jail, and they had a chance then to take action years back. But that shows you the kind of corrupt, this is what thugs do, folks. They get out there and then they try and go at you and eat at you. And they put people in place. You watch them. You take care of everything. And then you go to the Ethics Commission. It's no coincidence that Sam Moku, LaBoy, and others are there in that office. And then Ernie Martin is in the city council. They're pushing him to become mayor. They, being whoever this secret little dark order headed by Mufi Hanneman, apparently sanctioned by Peter Carlisle, and to even include Caldwell. I would like to see Caldwell speak out on some of these things. But then I guess he's just learning a leader needs to step in front of the line. But if you're a leader, you should have been in front of the line all along. But anyway, that's just talking about his lame commercial where he declares that a leader should go to the front of the line. But that's why they call it leader. But, guys, I know this sounds kind of strange, but when you have this kind of behavior and Mufi Hanneman is not having to answer anything, he has Sam Moku, and then we have the ethics. Well, I told you the Ethics Commission is they're absent. No ethics in the Ethics Commission as far as I'm concerned because I filed numerous complaints. I've sent people with substantial complaints, and Chuck Tato dismisses them or ignores them. There are others that are sitting right there now involving people at Copley Holly, as I read before, Joy Wilson, and all of that involved, and Chuck Tato refuses to do anything. This goes back to this climate or culture of corruption. I describe it as corruption because it isn't transparent. When you inquire about it, they don't answer. They ignore you. And then they shred documents. With federal grants, by the way, they have a policy. You've got to preserve records for an extended period of time. You just can't get rid of them. And the nonprofits for the grant, the landfill grant, tell me that they, too, actually was told by the people in the community development office that they shredded the documents. And I have that statement. So, again, they can't balance their books, but it gives the appearance, as I've discussed, that they didn't submit, or but they now claim they did. And Lota and Sam Moku say they can't find the documents. But, in fact, other nonprofits acknowledge that they were shredded because they don't want the records to be there for to show that Moku had any involvement or Ernie Martin had any involvement. But Martin, his behavior and warrants watching. And then we look at this Nestor Garcia. Once again, one of the dumbest statements and most offensive statements I've heard made in recent days was by Chuck Tato when he said that the vote that Nestor Garcia, those votes that he made, really did influence the outcome on real issues. Well, if that was the way you judge whether you put someone in jail, a guy that goes in and shoot up the place or rob the bank and in his haste runs out with a dollar, well, he didn't take all of the money. Yes, it caused some disruption in the bank's operations, but he didn't get the $2 million that he was seeking. So therefore, we are not going. We think the crime of 2 days and a Denny's lunch would be sufficient for punishment. This is, again, symptoms of a corrupt government. When kids are being caught and strung out and sent abroad for having a crack pipe, but you can get a guy who was caught for smuggling and trafficking cocaine, sentenced, and find his way back to City Hall. Ann Kobayashi had Milton Holt in her office in the recent past, gave him an office. What can we conclude about this city government other than, and I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but I'm going to say what's in mine. It's corruption. You can't give the public cold shoulders who owns the government and give them the runaround and tax them for every little thing they do, parking meters and all of that. And then a guy who has an expertise in importing drugs, illicit drugs, by the way, and gets sentenced to jail can have and walk the halls of the city hall freely. Am I wrong? Might be. But in this lifetime, I'm going to try to make up for lost pace that I think we as citizens, this is how we fix this problem. The Carlisles, the Caldwells, the Hannemans, we need to give them a one-way bus ticket. And I know we don't have a bus it goes around in a circle. We'll see them tomorrow, but it's just a figure of speech. We need to take some drastic measures. And those drastic measures, I believe, vote for Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck. Because they're all characters anyway. There's no honest person in government, as far as I can say. And so they're fictitious. You know, an honest politician in City Hall today doesn't exist, nor does Goofy and Donald Duck and Mickey Mouse. So let's vote smart. Let's start demanding. And I would solicit from you, if you would call and ask the Attorney General to seek prosecution, or call the FBI and ask. Let's try and stimulate. See, if I call them up, it's just one person. And if these documents, if you're interested in them, I'll be happy to provide them, give you all the records. And no, don't call me up, Sam Moku, and with the childish voice pretending you won't get them. I'll give them to those people, that the citizens that want to make a change. So, again, this is real bad business. I don't know about you, but should we have this kind of behavior? And we go back to that circle of friends. Now, Rose Martinez, I told you, with Martin Hahn, she is running for state house, but she's also a member of the nonprofit Kapuna and Keiki Services. and she serves as the fundraiser person in charge for Martin Hahn. Good morning, caller. You have a comment, a question?
Carol.
Yes.
Good topic. You know, I know a retired FBI agent. He was like one of the directors for in Japan, actually. I retired, but I have connections with him. You have a number where I can contact you?
Yeah, 782-6627.
Okay. I think he can help me because he still has people in the agency that he knows, and he can refer me to people we can talk to.
Yeah. You know, we want to make sure that it's the allegations. I'm not saying that Chad is doing anything illegal. I'm asking the question, how does the city council have these relationships? And how do they weave their way into the halls of City Hall and influence and what have you? You follow.
Okay. Well, I'll get in contact with him. He's on the mailing, but I'll talk to him first and I'll get back to you on that.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Take care. Aloha.
Aloha. Anyway, guys.
Good show.
Any comments? Are you, Calvin Griffin and Weinberg? What Calvin? And Calvin is going to also be coming back on air in the very near future.
Right. Yeah, we're working it out right now, but he should be back on air pretty soon. But
you better hurry because Jan, little as you know it, he has the voice and the stamina, and because people we need to clear the air and put good things out there.
Right. One of the things, real quick, I want to comment on what you're talking about. It seems like, you know, you try to give people the information about what the what's out there, and a lot of them are looking for plausible deniability about reason why they shouldn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
We all know there's an air of intimidation here in the state it's palatable, you know. And those who do want to get involved, you know, it seems more and more difficult. Like I said, as far as transparency in the government, the things that you mentioned about some of the people that are currently involved in making decisions as far as our community is concerned. We do need to be vigilant as individuals, you know. We do need the right. We have the obligation as citizens to ask and also to follow up on certain things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what gets to me where, you know, you see it happening. And wonder the characterization of some of these people, with these people here, is that it's the, again, when you ask for the public's trust for a public position that's going to determine the direction of their life, I want somebody. I want their moral standards to be superior. You know, don't make any excuses why you can't do this. Just tell me, you know, just do it. That's all. But you set the example because the younger people nowadays, these are the ones, you know, when they see one thing and then they know that the reality is something totally different, it really gets discouraging and disheartening, and it discourages them from getting involved in the system, you know. But what you're doing, I keep applauding you over and over again, and you're doing a great job, and keep it up.
Yeah, nothing to add. Hats off, Carol. Great job.
But, guys, this is, and I didn't even reach to the core of this thing. And this is just for the sake of, in, you know, 45 minutes, you're trying to piece it together. But I stand back and I marvel at the amount of energy and the unique process that's occurring just to get people in office, just to allow convicted drug smugglers, embrace them, yet you are not accessible to the people.
Yeah.
What crime have we committed? Yeah. Maybe we all need to go out and start exporting and importing drugs and
I think the one thing
then we'll have access to our government, I guess.
I think the one thing a lot of these politicians count on is the fact that the American people have a very short attention span.
Yeah.
And they get amnesia after a certain period of time. And also, again, we talked about the mainstream press, where they seem to be complicit as far as not really getting to the nuts and bolts of it. Again, they're looking for plausible deniability why they shouldn't be asking these questions that you are as some other individuals. But actually, just what gets to me. But we just have to keep on plugging and take our responsibilities seriously.
Now, here's something else when we talk about this one common element they all have in the chief ringleader, Mufi Hanneman. Goes right back to his, and it's a funny thing. I can demonstrate, folks. You look at Mufi Hanneman's campaigns. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, he got the unions duped, and that's what's really. Maybe they've been visiting Chad. I don't know. But the unions are. We're going to get jobs. If they were to know the truth, as I reported last year, Hanneman was using Philippine signs made in the Philippines, imported by. Kevin Andrew, who admitted, openly admitted, he bought the signs and posters and banners in the Philippines. Nothing to do with unions.
Yeah.
But these dudes are running around embracing Mufi Hanuman. I mean, they must be smelling the roses. Something's, there must be a stash of something somewhere. And then when you look at Hanuman's team, I can take you to some halfway houses or some drug houses. That's where he get most of his people from, or a great number of them, to approach you and ask you if you could put your signs up. And if you want to doubt me, call me up and challenge me, and I'll give you the names and I'll give you the address. So this is the kinds of people. Now, maybe it's what they pay cheaper. They'll work for a sandwich or a quick fix. I don't know. Yeah. But they're out there. People that have... on drugs, doing drugs, living in halfway houses. I can take you to Kaneohe and show you a halfway house there. That's where the bulk of his people were coming from. How is it that he could find a way and gravitate to that behavior, that population?
Doesn't make you wonder about the character makeup of someone.
Well, I don't have any questions about curiosity about Mufi Hanuman. I know that Mufi Hanuman, everything he touches is tainted, and when it comes to politics. He might go to church and be honest, but in the political arena.
Yeah.
And then Sam Moku, I'm trying to figure out who is it that's trying to promote him. And then the funny thing is, John White ran against him and lost by a pig's ear. But here's the problem. John White pulling these strategies of this corruption and this sleazy behavior, who worked for Mazie Hirono at one time. You follow? Folks, we're not getting our business attended to. They're attending to themselves. So anyway, if you know and need a good pharmacist or want to go into the import or export business, call Ernie Martin's office. He has a real live expert there, willing and able to help you and probably cut all the corners for you. So anyway, you know, I used to think snow would only be found on Mount Akea, but now I can find it at Honolulu Holly, supposedly, or I guess. You never know.
Yeah.
Milton Hope. I mean, he actually got an office in Ann Kobayashi's. Didn't we send him down the road? Oh, and by the way, folks, they just don't stop rolling in. See, John Yoshimura, remember him?
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, see, he too is hanging out with Ernie Martin's. Yeah. See how they play this game, not revolving chairs. They own the place. So there's a April 9th, 2012, there was a fundraiser. And so the fundraiser person in charge was John Yoshimura. Rejects, people that run out of here, and he ran to Washington and worked for Daniel Okaka and never answered openly and was transparent about his incident here. And so do we call this a government of the people, for the people, by the people? I know where I'm going to save money. I'm going to City Hall when I need another prescription filled. So anyway, I'll talk to you guys later and see you. And I do apologize if you were offended. Then so be it. But this is the truth, and every document is here to support it, folks. And see you at the voting booth. Take care.
Carol, you...
You never want to come for me, oh no, knowing what you really need. You always say you had enough, oh no, you never want to live it up. But everybody's got the groove, yeah. Just
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI Honolulu.